It's time for another Internet Advisor Show podcast. Since 1998, we've been helping computer users get on the Internet, get around it, and get over the problems they encounter there. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour weekly radio program heard on WJR 760 AM in Detroit since 1998 and across the state of Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network. Now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor podcast.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Welcome, my snowbound and frigid friends. Hi, this is Foster Brown. Welcome to the Internet Advisor. I think it's pretty safe to say that, regardless of when you are going to get a chance to hear this program. We got a great show lined up for you today. We're going to be talking about starting the new year on the right foot. Gary Baker and Cal Carson in studio with me. We're going to be talking about getting your new computer, getting it going properly, and tuning up that old one. Mike Wendland will be with us. PC Mike, he's now on the road. Welcome to the Internet Advisor, our very first broadcast here of the year 2014. And I'm delighted to have company with me that's been with me for all of that time, Gary Baker. Good to have you here.
It's great to be here.
And also Mr. Cal Carson, who has been here with a good deal of that time. Good to have you.
I have no idea how big a good deal is, but it's been a long time.
It has been, and thank you guys so much for being part of this. And for you out there as well, who have made our program part of your day-to-day, we hope to reward you with some really good practical advice about, for instance, if Santa packed your Christmas box under the tree with a brand new device, that could be a computer in particular, we'd like to help you with some ideas of first things to do.
I mean, if you
get
really,
off the right foot.
If you really thought about it, do you know anybody in your life that had a holiday season, whatever it may be, that there wasn't at least one technology gift somewhere there?
Isn't that true? Yeah. Grandchildren, for instance, got little tablets in a couple of cases. Exactly. And I'm trying to think of some of the other. Oh, I had a lady call me this morning, 8 o'clock this morning, and this is, we're at a senior home, and the lady said, "My daughter got me a phone. I don't know how to turn it on. It's black." And she didn't mean the color of the phone. She meant the screen.
Wow.
So we did a lot of talking, and it turns out it was one of these programs. It was a program called Reach Out, which is particularly, they broker phones for seniors in particular as like emergency devices. The account was through Verizon, but the phones have a unique, pretty simple kind of an outreach. So I said, you need to talk to the person that was her daughter who got into it. But that's the kind of thing that people are coming up with, you know.
Exactly.
Getting devices that they look really nice, but when they open them up, they kind of, all right, now what do I do from here on out? Especially, I think, if it's some of the more mobile devices, you know, the tablets and things like that people are moving into.
Well, and they're actually pretty intuitive, but sometimes older people don't think about it being intuitive. They think it's got to be complicated, and it's really not so complicated, but they're not willing to try it.
Well, one of the things I'm finding, see what your thoughts are on this, with mobile devices, I'm thinking of the tablets that are out there right now, Android, Apple, and then the Windows 8 platforms that are out there, like the Surface that you and I are using, Gary. You got the Pro, I have the 2. But one of the problems with them is there's a huge amount of configuration. And I'm finding with people who aren't real tech savvy, there's a bit of confusion when they get to, well, what do I do with what I got here? Not so much with the Apple devices, because you have a pretty standard kind of a look when you open up the machine. But for instance, with the Android devices, you can configure that homepage any number of ways. And with the Windows devices, you can also configure them. And I think that part of configuring them is a little bit of mystery.
But you don't have to configure them.
No,
you can
just
leave it the way it
is.
Yes. Right? And unless you want to configure it, why not leave it as the default?
Well, some people will say, well, I want to have my contacts or I want to have my pictures, and then kind of digging further beyond that becomes a bit of a problem.
But most of the things that you normally would need are pretty easy to get to. That's why they call it the default settings.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, I don't know if I'm 100% in agreement with that, but for the, I'd say for the most part, you're correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I noticed that, like, over the holidays, I had two couples over at the house, and both of them had Android devices, and neither one of the two were alike. So
yes.
it took a little pecking around, but if you look at the base configuration, you are correct. The normal things, the phone, the mail, the browser are generally on
but
the first.
You made a good point, though, Kel. I think that with Windows devices and with Apple devices, you have a standard kind of a look.
Yes.
Because
there's one company
putting them out. Exactly.
With the Android, hey,
there are all sorts of skins.
Nokia has a standard, too, and they're all alike.
Well,
Samsung is has a standard look, and they're all alike. But the problem is, you know, when we group all the Android systems together instead of individual makers, right?
And to be honest with you.
But we don't have a program that's long enough to do all those.
Yeah.
You know, because there's so many different it's not that many different flavors, but there's a lot of different flavors.
And you see, what I'm seeing with the Android devices, for instance, is a lot of people are moving towards the Nexus because that's the Google plan. That phone is like pure Google, and it's not the skins. I forget what Samsung calls their skin, what their interface is, but they have a certain name for it. And Sony has a name for theirs. Now, I see with Nokia, when it's a Windows phone, you really have the same Windows look that you have on any other Windows device, pretty much.
Well, because it all comes out, it's all by Microsoft.
Right. But in any case, I'm finding that some people, and I'll put my wife in that, Jenny, the other day, and I've worked really hard over the last 6 months with her to try to simplify, and that's been a big part of it, simplify the look of the homepage on her Android phone. And I got it for her because it was a bigger screen. But there's a lot of stuff on there that is just really still confusing.
But maybe that's the wrong approach. Saying is that I know what you're trying to do by simplifying it to make it easy for her to use. But then on the other hand, maybe we should start showing them how to customize after simplification so that they can learn how to do this themselves.
But you got some people like my wife, and I'm Jenny, I love you. This is not a negative comment, but you have people who don't want to know.
Well, that's the
they
point.
They just want to make my phone calls, to get to my email, get to my Facebook, or whatever contacts.
And you can do that virtually out of the box. The problem is that when you are a kid, you're used to being confused about a lot of things, right? Because you're experiencing something for the first time every day, every week. So you're used to that. As adults, we were confused early on. We haven't been confused in a long time.
Yes, exactly.
And we don't want to be confused anymore. So we don't want to be in a situation where we have to try some things. And that's just kind of awful.
I would go a different direction on that, Gary, but we can talk about that.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in just a minute.
Right,
by the way, when we come back, folks, we're going to talk about first things first when you got a new device. Stick around for that. Some good practical information for you here on the Internet Advisor.
To the Internet Advisor. Once again, your hosts, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Rudell.
Welcome back. You may have heard Ed Rudell's name taken in vain there. He's on a slow train to Grand Rapids and back. Actually, a fast train. He didn't want to make the snow train.
He was going to go tomorrow all the weather.
With the predictions of much snow and very, very Arctic temperatures on its way. Glad you folks could be here with us. And thank you for joining us for our very first program of 2014, our 16th year of doing this. And we're delighted to be able to continue to bring this to you. And some exciting things coming up this year, by the way, that will be unfolding as well. But guys, Cal, you were going to make a point, I thought, just before we close the first hour on dealing with some of the complexities of these mobile devices that people may have gotten before we talk about how do you handle your new device.
Oh, my God. I can't even remember.
I
know exactly what it was. Because Gary was talking about how as older adults were less reluctant to become confused.
Right.
And I think it's and that younger people, they don't mind being confused because they're young.
I think it's
different. I think it's not an issue of confusion. I think it's an issue of, and I mean this in a kind way, of recklessness. In other words, we're cautious as older people. Maybe we should think before we do this.
Yeah.
Kids are like, hey, what the heck? Let's go on in and find out what the
heck. Because we took the jump off of that high bridge.
So
go ahead and push that button.
Yeah.
They've never had the experience of pushing the button a long time ago, and it would blow things up.
Correct.
On your phone, literally. But you may be right there.
Kevin. Yeah, I think it's more it's, that.
You know, I want to be a little more cautious. I'm not going to break anything.
Yeah, right? I will say, by the way, that applies to all interfaces you're going to deal with, all these new devices, et cetera.
Everything.
In general. But with Windows 8 in particular, I think, over this last year, we've seen that the very differentness of it has kept people from doing just that. Just press it. Just go on that screen and press one and see what happens.
But they're used to having... So Windows 8, it was on a computer. And they're thinking, no, the computer looks like this.
Yeah.
And no, the Nuke, you know, if that had been... If they had bought the exact same interface on a tablet, they would have said, oh, well, it's a tablet. I got to think about it differently.
Right, exactly.
And they would have been fine with that Metro interface.
By the way, one of the things I'm finding that has become very different using the Microsoft Surface, and this could apply to any kind of a tablet, I'm learning to use it in landscape. Matter of fact, you can use it in portrait, but it's very awkward. Yeah, but why? Exactly. Yeah. And I'm learning that when you use it in landscape, folks, that's the wide rather than the tall.
Yes.
You get to use your thumbs, and a lot of information becomes very accessible to it. And also the whole notion of doing a split screen becomes really neat. But it was different because with an iPad, for instance, Cal, I open that up in the portrait mode, which is the leaf viewer length, and everything works fine in that. Mm-hmm. Everything displays fine.
Yep.
But I would not think of that necessarily turning it into landscape. Even with a Bluetooth keyboard, I probably wouldn't. That was just from my background until I started using this.
A lot of the keyboards now, because they're oriented horizontally.
Yes.
Right? People are using
are pushing it towards that way.
But
although I'm seeing with the iPads that I've seen with the docks, they're often ones they sit in, the ones that I've seen in coffee shops, for instance.
Sure.
You got one, Cal? Yeah, I think you got one like that. Yeah. When you sit it in it, you still use it in the portrait mode,
no,
right?
No, oh, no, it's in landscape.
Oh, it's in landscape. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll hold it up to the mic. See, folks? It's in landscape.
You know, that's beautiful. Yeah. Could hold it up a little higher.
A little closer.
A little higher.
Oh, you have the integrated one, or the integrated keyboard.
It's tasteful without being gaudy. But even before you said that, I use my iPad more. I've always used it more landscape than portrait.
Okay.
Yeah, and
okay.
I think it's because all my life I've been looking at a PC.
Absolutely. That's how
laptop,
you normally look at.
And landscape is fine. But I have noticed that if I am doing things that are of a long reading nature, I will turn it into portrait format for some strange reason because I just like that 8.5 by 11 page.
Guys, I have to tell you that the ultimate...
Just to finish the point, though, when you have this kind of a cover, folks...
That's the foldable.
The foldable as a book form, and you open it like a cover of a book, you want to hold it in... in a vertical fashion.
Right.
And when you use
when I open
where
it,
you have a...
Yeah, I open it in the form of a laptop because my cover is that way.
Right.
Yeah. It's in landscape form.
And you have the keyboard.
Correct.
And with the keyboard, you do that.
Yeah, exactly.
And then when you watch movies, of course, you watch movies in a horizontal...
Usually.
The 9x16 format.
Right. Right. Hey, guys, let's get... this is one aspect
9
of...
9x16? You mean 16 by 9.
16 by 9, that's
You're
right.
Very good, Cal. You're absolutely right.
All right, guys, let's get... this is one part of first things first, but let's talk about what happens for folks... Some tips for folks about what to do when you get a brand new computer.
Well,
what are some of the first things you should do?
It's a tad bit late.
Say thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Profusely.
My mama always told me that.
That's true. All right, after the thank yous.
Well, it's a little bit late, but it's better late than never. Okay, so you whip that rascal out the box, and you put it all together, and you slap that Ethernet cable in the back, and bam, you're online, and life is groovy. And, that thing's been sitting in a box for about 6 months. And it hasn't had an update to the operating system or anything else on it in a while. So the first thing you want to do is after you've gotten over to the initial joy of getting it and you're all crazy mad.
And fingerprints all over it or whatever. Yeah.
you should stop for a second and do a couple of things, at least in my opinion. Number one, you need to make sure that you have some sort of antivirus, anti-malware program on it, which you probably will have because they're going to give it to you absolutely free.
Normally now out of the box
you've
got something.
Make sure it's active.
Yeah. And they'll give it to you free.
That point that Gary made is pretty good, but I think right out of the box, they're generally active. But the
they're
point is,
be, right?
for a limited period of time normally, and that's one of the key things we can talk
about.
Yeah,
exactly. They'll give you, 9 times out of 10, they're going to give you either a 60-day copy of McAfee or Norton. Those are the two big ones that you'll end up getting out of the box. And the first thing, in my opinion, you want to do is go into Control Panel and then Programs and then remove that version right off of it. And then after you
Why? Please tell me that.
Because in 60 days, it's going to go like, pay me, pay me, pay me, pay me.
Or if it doesn't, if you miss that notice, suddenly you're without protection.
Oh, right. It'll just sit there and be
Which
dead.
Is even worse.
We've had people call in the show. Well, I had Norton on my machine. Well, when did it expire?
I will guarantee you that they will not miss it. They won't think about they won't miss it. Because what's going to happen is that after 60 days, it's going to say, hey, want to buy? Want to buy? Want to buy? Want to buy? And it'll keep driving you nuts with that. So rather than go through that madness, 9 times out of 10, most of our listeners will either have internet service from some large provider, either cable or DSL, which would be like UVerse or Comcast, just
AT&T,
two examples.
Yeah,
both of those, if they're with another cable company like Charter or WOW or that sort of thing, all of them now will give you free either McAfee or Norton.
Right.
Okay.
And so take off the one that's the trial on the machine.
Right.
And add on, download it from their website, that version that they're providing to you.
Okay.
It's the full version. It costs you absolutely nothing. Well, actually, you're paying for it with your provider fees to the cable company. Yeah. But you
nothing
get a,
extra.
You get a full version. Right. You load it on there, and it won't be nagging you later on about, renew me.
And when you do uninstall it, you go to uninstall programs, and you uninstall it.
Correct.
And then I'd recommend that you actually shut down your machine.
Reboot.
Yes.
Right.
And then you boot it back up. I like to boot it back down again. Mm-hmm. Because what happens is it uninstalls most of the components. But there's some components that are actually active.
Yes.
So they won't uninstall the active components.
Norton is a good example of that. You will have three, like their Norton Updater or Norton. There's a whole bunch of things if you go into your control panel.
You know, actually, believe it or not, they got cleaner with it.
They did get better. That's true.
Their uninstall actually will uninstall it, which is amazingly wonderful.
Yeah. Okay. The brand new ones.
Let me add it. I'm going to add a little.
But then if you do uninstall it, you uninstall it, you boot up. Boot back down, boot up again. Right. The second time you boot down, it uninstalls everything because they're not active
anymore. And the other thing, too, is because your machine is so brand new, that shouldn't take long.
No.
Right.
It shouldn't take longer to do that.
And Cal's right about Norton and McAfee both. Those two, it's not for all the programs, but those two, I think, have gotten much cleaner, so they shut them down and then deactivate.
Now,
if
you want to put Norton back on after that, go ahead. Our point is this, or McAfee. Our point is your cable provider will probably give it to you for free.
They want to because it helps everybody.
Yeah, and B, if you install it yourself, you know the terms and conditions you set up for if it's like a year. Folks, we got more things to talk about, and we're going to do that as our program goes on, so please stay tuned. Things to do when you first get a computer, and also some things to do for the new year for your existing computer. But right now, we're going to take a quick pause. When we come back, we're going to meet an old friend of ours, PC Mike. Mike Wendland is going to be with us on the show, and he has taken to the road. We'll find out more about that in just a moment. You should probably be playing the tune On the Road Again for our next guest here, and that's our old friend Mike Wendland, PC Mike. Now the man, do we call you King of the Road, Mike?
You can call me anything, just not late for dinner.
That's right. Mike Wendland, happy New Year to you, and it's good to have you here with us on the Internet Advisor.
Well, it is great to always to be with you guys. You've got a terrific show, and you are the dean now of all these.
Oh, my Lord. Well, is that what they call this bald spot that's
they
growing?
Were silly enough to leave us on for 16 years, Mike?
well, you know something, Foster. A long time ago, before I got to the Internet Advisor, Mike used to have a radio show, and I used to follow him all the time. Matter of fact, he did remotes. Yeah, and it was great. You go out, and he'd be at a computer store doing his thing. It was a scream.
So, yeah, that was the first one, I think, in the whole metropolitan Detroit area.
Very likely. So, yeah. Mike, how do you take care of that Jones? How do you get that fixed now?
Well, I'm on WJR all the time. W calls. I still do NBC once a week. I do a tech report from them once a week, and I have my PC mic thing. But I miss radio. I loved radio. Yeah. I loved taking the phone calls, answering the questions.
Yeah.
Radio, you know, I started off in radio when I was 12 years old. We had an illegal radio station broadcast in Bay City, Michigan. And, I mean, we programmed that thing around the clock summertime. And then of course, 13, 14, I discovered girls, and there went my radio career.
In high school,
I signed on our local Dawn to Dusk station in Bay City, and then came at the end of school and signed it off. And,
I love it.
Signed it on in the morning and signed it off at night and did the agricultural report during the lunch hour.
You mean on your own show, you didn't? The FTC didn't come around?
Well, we had one of the guys that was very smart. See, I got the son. He was the son of the chief of police. Was a buddy of mine.
They
knew every time the FCC rolled into town, and we just, you know, suddenly the station wasn't on the air.
When the FCC would roll into town, the trucks with the antennas looking for the pirate stations.
I can remember.
And it was a big deal. I don't think they look for them now.
A freshman in college. You know, we'd see the truck rolling up, and everybody would take a component and back to the room, and it was always disassembled. And as soon as they left, back on the air. And that station was so powerful, we could reach almost the entire quad. all of a block.
We reached much of the east side of Bay City.
You know, Mike, it's interesting. Fun. We're heard in Bay City right now, as a matter of fact, on the station up there as part of our network. So it's kind of neat that we're hearing these stories of Bay City and Mike Wendland's career up there.
We used to be WXOX and then WBCM. Mm-hmm. And then I went to WKNX in Saginaw and worked there. And I was just a kid, you know, right out of high school and working my way through college. And I loved radio.
So. I misspoke. We're on WNEM now in Saginaw, 1250
AM. Really? That used to be the TV station. That used to be Channel 5, which was the NBC TV station. Yeah, but I don't know what it is now.
Who knows? Hey, but, you know, there is that magic that comes with radio. And folks, for all of the reach that is now available through the internet, that immediacy, that contact with people. I know, Mike, what you're saying. I told somebody that I'm the kind of guy who would tear off that corner of a shirt board and be standing in a corner saying, "We'll broadcast for food."
I would too.
Mike was one of the people that would contact me when we first got started and gave me my start in doing television. Then I went on to television for 2 years once a week. And most people, Mike, will not forgive you for that, by the way.
Mike, you have morphed into even a bigger thing. Let's talk about your new career, which has taken you on the road. And by the way, if you go to PCMike.com, you get links to that, and we'll also be posting the links to your road trekking site. But let's talk a little bit of road trekking and what that is.
Well, you know, I've spent 40 years in broadcast journalism and in, you know, print journalism. I worked for the Free Press, the Detroit News, the Bay City Times, and the radio. But the last, you know, 20 years or so of my career, Channel 4, I did a lot of traveling. After I left 4, and I was just a stand-up. I'd run into a city, fly into a city, do a stand-up, and then leave. And it was just, you know, slam, bam, we're out of here,
ma'am. Right.
And that was my television, and that was my newspaper reporting. And so I just wanted to go back and see stuff. I love telling stories. When I was at the Free Press, I was their video columnist for a couple of years.
That's right.
Traveled around Michigan telling video stories. My wife Jennifer and I just loved it, and so we got a little motor home, a small 24-foot motor home, and we traveled the country. I'm on the road right now. I'm in Williamstown, Kentucky, as we talk to you.
Mm.
And we travel the country, and whatever I find interesting, I write about, and I tell about, and I do a video about.
We should tell folks, being down in Kentucky, people think he's escaping the cold. You embrace it. You've gone to the UP up near Tequamanon Falls.
The reason I'm coming back is we're coming home, and I got to shovel my driveway tonight. I guess a big storm's coming.
Yeah.
And then we're heading up through the Upper Peninsula in the next week and a half, and then over to Duluth, and then I'm going to cover a 200-mile sled dog ride from Duluth all the way north to the Canadian border, where they tell me there's 3.5 feet of snow on the ground.
Now, when you say cover, Mike Wendland, do you mean as in get on board a sled?
Well, I did that last year. I'll probably do that this year. It's pretty fun. But I'll actually do video and photos and a story that combines winter camping with this cool, this is the only North American qualifier for the Iditarod.
That's right, that's right. That's
and
right.
Then I will do, you know, what it's like living up in the middle northern Minnesota in the middle of the wintertime. And so there'll be, you know, I have no idea.
Yeah, we're talking about 7 inches
of
snow.
Right there, I know I'll do.
Yeah, we're talking about 7 inches of snow and single digits weather as if it was, you know, and it will be record-breaking for our area here of southeast Michigan, for instance. But up there, it's every day. Cal, you had something.
So, Mike, when you're out on the road and you're all over the place doing the things that you do, I would imagine MiFis and cellular phones. How do you do your connectivity to stay in contact with the rest of civilization?
Well, that's the other thing that, and plus, I don't know if we knew this the last time you and I talked, but since November, I'm also doing on the world reports for Verizon Wireless.
I didn't know that.
Wow.
Yeah, they have a cool little blog, and it's, you know, it's whatever I want to do again, I just on the road reports. But it started off because they heard of, I have a MiFi card here in my little motorhome, and so I always have a network going. And I've got an extender on it. So, I think Yellowstone National Park was the only place where I couldn't get coverage for a couple of days. And every place else I've got it. And actually, even there, I found a place you could drive up to the top of a mountain and get a coverage. But I use Wi-Fi to keep in contact. And then I keep buying tech gadgets. So the two hobbies go together. I just bought a drone.
I want to talk about that in a second, but folks, what's interesting with Mike's Con, I want to just to point you back there, is if you love to travel, Mike is getting a lot of technology, a lot of gadgets, et cetera, that help people in particular who are doing travel, and you can find out more about, for instance, that extender and the MiFi, et cetera. But talk about the drone. That is fascinating. I saw that segment.
Well, the drone is actually an amazing little story that has all sorts of privacy implications, but for me and you guys, it's just the cool tech stuff. This is a It cost the one I've got now is called the Phantom 2, and when you hook it all up with a gimbal and like a little Steadicam and the GoPro high def camera, it costs you a couple of grand. But this thing is amazing, the quality of video that you get.
And
I got it.
You can see that, by the way, on Mike's site. Mike has a video you can watch. It's amazing.
When I go out to I just put it up in my front yard at home the other day, and I got snow. But when I go out to these national parks and these really beautiful areas, the beaches of the Emerald Coast in Florida, I'll put this drone up and I'll be able to show a wide variety of the shots and, you know, and then pictures of my little motorhome moving up and down the mountain pass. It's just a great compliment to the regular video and the photos.
Yeah, and it's a Steadicam, as Mike mentioned, which is part of the cost, but I mean, it does not jiggle around, you know, so you've got the kind of thing you'll see, for instance, with the helicopters and news.
Now, these things have become a huge hobby. I mean, they're selling 1,000 to 2,000 of these in the U.S. every week. So imagine what's going to happen in a couple of years. Now, the FAA is already starting to crack down.
Yeah.
Big media outfits are getting them. Think of the privacy implications when you can't get into a crime scene. A TV crew sends up its drone and it flies over it. So there's going to be some conflict. But I'm talking about pure hobby use of it now in getting just beautiful pictures.
But Mike,
I'm having a ball with it.
What you're talking about, and I love the way you deal with technology too, because it kind of looks ahead as well. And as a thoughtful reporter saying, you know, there are some other concerns here. While it's a cool gadget, think of what happens, for instance, for the police, if suddenly this little drone, maybe the size of a dragonfly, is taking pictures for a local TV. You thought that, you know, the internet was invasive before with Twitter, et cetera. Think of what could be done with a drone.
Well, here's the other thing, and this is my other favorite tool, Google Glasses.
Oh, have you got it there?
I just wrote, I'm now one of their, quote, explorers. I just wrote a column on PC Mike about it. This, I think, is going to have more privacy issues than anything.
Oh, yeah.
But again, from the tech point of view, I think it is the most revolutionary technology device I've seen since the iPhone in 2007.
Yeah.
This thing is just stunning. But
it's incredible.
When people are wearing it, they can take your photo by blinking their right eye. They can
Mike,
run
you
video.
Know what? We're running out of time. We'll keep up with you during the year. PCMike.com is all you need to know. It's that time in our program and in a brand new year to welcome Mike Brennan to tell us what the top headlines are in our Michigan technology news. Hi, Mike, and welcome to a brand new year. Welcome to 2014.
Thanks, Foster. Happy New Year to yourself.
Thank you very much. And other than a great win by Michigan State University, in the Rose Bowl and record-breaking cold. What are the headlines?
Well, Chrysler Foundation is donating $229,000 in grants to support the first robotics teams in a number of states, including Michigan. And FIRST stands for Inspiration, Recognition of Science and Technology. And it's where they take these high school kids and let them build robots, get them introduced to, you know, science and technology, and get them all fired up, hopefully, and get them into those careers. And some 29 Michigan high schools are receiving a portion of those grants. And if you go to my website, it's obviously the list is very long, and I'll let you read it for yourself. But this is good news. So.
Oh, it's exciting to see. We talk so much about the need for young IT people, and this is a great way of promoting it. So hats off to Chrysler for doing that, the Chrysler Foundation, rather. By the way, this is kind of interesting. One of your headlines here, I see that Samsung and their cell phones, which have been, boy, this kind of kicking butt and taking numbers, as they say, they discovered a vulnerability in the Galaxy S4.
Yeah, some Israeli researchers contend, although Samsung denies this, that there is allow a hacker to easily intercept secure data in emails through this new, what Samsung had thought was a very high security mobile defense that they had set up in these phones. And it's kind of, you know, the Israelis are saying one thing and Samsung saying another. But, mobile phones to me are always problematic. I never do anything too secure on those. I don't check my bank account or anything like that. Because a lot of people just don't, even when, you know, it's not like having a laptop or a desktop where you've got the antivirus software and all that jazz.
Right.
A lot of people just don't bother with that on mobile phones. So they, you know, they could, is there a vulnerability? Not sure, but could be.
Yeah,
so,
and I guess it's just kind of a warning shot across our bows not to be too sloppy with the way that we share information, especially on these incredibly mobile devices. Hey, I understand that out west in Michigan, Muskegon, is seeing some really nice growth in jobs.
Yeah, they ranked third in the state in percentage of job growth. They saw a 2.3% increase in non-farm employment and added 1,400 jobs. Well, Muskegon's not a big county, so, I mean, it's all relative. The top ones, of course, were Grand Rapids, which added 3.7% growth, and the Holland-Grand Haven area, which did 2.7, which goes along with a story that we had a couple weeks ago saying that the west side of the state was going to grow faster than the east. So
it is interesting to see that there is that kind of growth going on there. Good news, and I know we got folks who listen to us in the Muskegon and Grand Rapids area, so good news for those folks out there and for the state in general. Maybe one more thing before we take a break. I noticed one of the articles you had here was that medical devices look like the next big thing for us here in our state of Michigan.
Yeah, they actually, particularly on the west side of the state, speaking of the west side, they're real big over here. I mean, a lot of manufacturing prowess is now going into medical devices. And, of course, we have the granddaddy of all medical device makers with Stryker in Kalamazoo. But the MIT Enterprise Forum is going to have a program on that on January 8th, where they're going to take a look at that and discuss the pros and cons of it. Is it good or is it bad? I don't see how it could be bad, but they're going to take a look at all sides of the question.
Yeah.
So.
Well, one of the things that you do, Mike, and we should tell people about mitechnews.com, and it's probably a good time for a little commercial right now, is that you look at not only the headlines of things that have been happening in the news, but also keep people who are entrepreneurs, who might be interested in a certain area, interested or aware of events that are taking place, conferences like this one coming up in Grand Rapids that deals with the medical industry. And you also deal with entrepreneurs and, for instance, some of the entrepreneur meetings that are going on around the state. So, folks, when you subscribe, and by the way, it is absolutely free, costs you nothing, zero, nada, nothing, and to subscribe to mitechnews.com. And you can do that so simply. Make it one of your first New Year's resolutions for 2014. Go to internetadvisor.net, scroll down the page, and right next to Mike, you'll see a little sign that says subscribe here. Click on that, and you can then make sure that you get all of these headlines and the stories behind them delivered to you directly every week. Mike, let's wrap up with the story I saw here about how Michigan and Israel can partner on technology. A meeting coming up soon.
Yeah, the Michigan-Israel Business Bridge, which has been around for a number of years and promotes just that, cooperation, and particularly the technology space between Israel, which is a very inventive technological country.
Yeah.
A lot of entrepreneurs there, they really are sharp in a lot of areas. They want to work with the state in terms of the connected autonomous vehicle. So there'll be a program on January 9th, and you need to register by January 7th, on that very subject, and they're bringing in a bunch of speakers, including several from Israel. And again, the whole idea is to foster connections and get deals going so that, you know, Michigan works more closely with that technology-savvy country in the Middle East. So.
Well, you know, I don't mind my name being taken in vain in that particular case, where you're fostering connections. Because
yes,
that's what you do in many ways with the MITechNews.com, folks. So, once again, be sure to get your free subscription by going to internetadvisor.net and clicking on that subscribe here button. You'll find out about that meeting and many more coming up in the state of Michigan, and you can foster anything you want. Mike,
there you go.
Hey, thank you so much, Mike. Have a great beginning of the new year, and we will see you as we march on with more important headlines.
Hey, and everybody out there, let's have a really prosperous 2014.
Thank you so much, Mike. Hey, folks, we're going to continue on with something we started at the beginning of the program, and we're going to have a theme going throughout the rest of the show as well, and that is first things first. What do you do when you get a new computer or a new mobile device, a tablet, or maybe even a phone? First kind of things you do, but particularly with essentially computer-based kind of things, like, although the phones nowadays are essentially computers in your pocket, things like tablets and brand new laptops and new desktops. And guys, when we were talking initially, Cal, you had said one of the things we wanted to start off right away is when you get a new device, get rid of the antivirus programs often that are installed with the machine, because often, not because they're bad, but necessarily because they're often limited.
They're the trial version that comes
exactly,
with it.
A trial version. And so then you would sweep it out. You can go to your online provider and you can get download those, and they're for free, and they're usually configured to work with you very well. Now, the other thing I would say also, for those of you who buy a Windows product and it's a new one, either Windows 7 or Windows 8, pardon me, is to make sure you have Microsoft Security Essentials installed. If you have a Windows 8 machine, you don't have to install anything, because it is already configured as part of the operating system. What you will receive are regular updates every day of virus definitions with that. It's called Defender. If you have Windows 7, download the free Microsoft Security Essentials, and that, again, will take care of – it's really configured free of charge to do an excellent job of protecting you. Now, you might want to do things like also go to our Internet Advisor website, and there under the toolkit, Ed Rudell has configured connections where you can get malware protection as well. Quickly, guys, difference between malware and anti-malware and antivirus programs?
Malware, in my opinion, is something that more is targeted towards your machine directly.
Yeah.
It will create problems with your machine. Antivirus is more a malicious sort of software that is not only going to do damage to your machine, but it's going to use your machine to do damage to others.
Right. And you can use the malware, anti-malware programs like Malwarebytes, which we have a link to.
Right.
That's a great one to do that.
Yeah, sometimes it's a little more substance over form, too. It's, you know, some can be more dastardly than others.
Right.
And in either, you know, kind of in either category.
Right. And it's you used to say belts and suspenders in that
right.
case. They have both of them available. All right, folks, we're going to continue with these kind of pieces of advice about new computers and tablets and getting yourself protected into the brand new year. And also talking about what do you do with your existing machine to make it work well in the new year. All that coming up in the second hour.
You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show. If you want to see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage at internetadvisor.net. That's where you'll also find past podcasts, our toolkit full of free software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, and other resources. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact form on the homepage or enter our forums and place your question there. You can also friend us on Facebook. Now let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor Show podcast. Welcome once again. It's hour number two of the Internet Advisor. If you're just joining us, this is the hour in which we take your questions sent to us by email, and we also have some tips for you on what to do if you've got a brand new device, laptop, maybe a desktop, maybe, well, who knows what you got out there, a tablet.
We got some advice for you on what to do first things first, and also how to take care of that computer you had around for a while. All that coming up. Welcome to hour number two of the Internet Advisor. Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Cal Carson in studio. And guys, one of the things we've been talking about, and we'll be answering some questions people have sent it to us in this hour as well, kind of some practical hints for people who are maybe have a new device that they got under the tree or the Hanukkah bush, as the case may be, or whatever the case was. What do you do with a brand new device? Last hour, we talked about making sure you got good security on it. We're going to talk about some other things coming up. But, Gary, you gave us a tip, and this is kind of a step back a little bit. We'll post this as well on the homepage. You can get this. What do you do with those old devices? Maybe they're piling up in your closet. You might have an old, it could be a PC, it could be a laptop, it could be a cell phone, for instance. Do you just kind of, you know, give them away? Sometimes they follow the family chain down to the kids and the grandkids, etc.
Somebody has to get rid of them.
Somebody. But you may have a closet full of technology and not realize there's gold in them thar devices.
Some of them, anyway.
And some of them. And it may not be a huge amount of money, but, Gary, you found a place called TechPayout.com that you alerted us to. That is a newer one. I hadn't heard about that before. Cal, had you heard that name?
Oh, no. I never go where Gary goes.
Smart man. Okay. Actually, it's really easy. It's three easy steps. You have to go on to techpayout.com.
We got a link for that.
Check to see if your particular your particular older item is listed there and get a quote for it. And then you can print out a free shipping label, and you take and box it up, put the label on it, send it in. As soon as they get it, they'll pay you.
And unless they can pay you through PayPal, I understand.
So you can
get a direct payment almost immediately through
that's correct.
Another one that's out there is a place called...
And it's pretty easy. You know exactly what you're going to get paid before you send it.
Heads up. A Gazelle. Gazelle.com, have you heard that one?
I've seen their commercials on TV.
And yes, they're making a big push. And I heard it through Leo Laporte, maybe a year or so ago. And that's gazelle.com. I've got that posted as well as a link on our homepage. I tested them out. Or, pardon me, I should say, I took a device and checked the price on both of them and actually found that Tech Payout had a better payout. About $10 better.
Oh, really?
I was talking. I was looking at it. I have an old Nokia 900 phone that runs Windows 7, so it's not real valuable, but it's still a good piece of equipment. It was in good shape, and just for kicks, I put it out there. It was worth $45 on Tech Payout, $35 on Gazelle.
Wow, that's quite a bit of a percent difference.
That's a big percent difference.
So, did you sell it?
No, I didn't. I did. It was not mine to sell. It was a loaner. But I just, out of curiosity, wanted to see what would happen with that. Yeah.
But, you know, there's one other alternative, too. If you're not necessarily looking to get money, but you still want to get rid of that equipment, there are a number of different 501c3 institutions that you can donate that equipment to and take, you know, any possible tax write-off from it, depending on what your situation is. You can consult with your tax attorney or your tax preparer, and they can tell you whether it's going to be advantageous.
I'm trying to think of Global Tech Ministries. I think, Cal, I sent you the link for that. Steve Beck is a dear friend of ours at Global Tech Ministries. What they do is they will take your whatever device it is that's in decent shape, and they will, this is desktops, and they could be quite an older technology, and they have gotten special license from Microsoft to refurbish these things, and then they will send them to mission organizations overseas, to orphanages, in this country as well, schools, you know, very often it helps them to...
And if it's not in decent shape, if it's just straight out broken, but you want to dispose of it responsibly, Best Buy and some of the other larger retail big box stores will dispose of those electronics for you for absolutely free.
Oh, really? Right. Yep. I was not aware of that.
Yes.
And then they go to Tech Payout. Who knows?
Yeah, I know. By the way, that business of disposing of your equipment responsibly is a big deal. We've seen horrible stories of places that where the groundwater is being polluted with heavy metals and things like that. It's supposedly, you know, certified, places in the third world. It could be in China, could be in Africa, anywhere. Horrible exploitation of the environment over there.
And the reputable companies will take the components apart and take the dastardly stuff out and dispose of that properly, and the rest can be disposed of in a more normal fashion.
We have often said this, folks, please don't take those old CRT, cathode ray tube monitors, and just throw them in the junk.
Oh, absolutely.
Please don't do that.
Lots
find a place for recycling. Lead, that surrounded the tubes and all sorts of other junk.
Oh, I could tell you a story about CRT. I put one out to the curb, and believe it was amazing. The harvesters will come by, right. And the first group will take the big copper coil off the back of the tube.
Oh, yeah.
The second group will come by and take the circuit board.
Ah.
The third group will come by and pull out any wiring harness that's left in it. And the fourth person that comes by will take whatever that's left.
Yeah. No kidding.
Yeah, seriously. They do
serious recycling right there at the curb.
I watched that happen with one, and I go like, I got to do this again because I had another one. And I put it out there, and they came by,
and they did the
same cycle.
Fascinating.
It's absolutely a scream.
So let's talk. So that's how to get some money out of or make good use of what you've had. Now, getting back to what your own devices are, we've talked about backup. No, we haven't talked about backup yet. We've got a brand new device here. How about making an image of your operating system? In other words, you get everything cleaned up, you got everything configured properly. Before you get to doing anything else with the machine, make an image of it? Would you?
You can do that, but I think more importantly, more than making an image of it, because making an image of a brand new machine is basically just taking the same CDs that came with it and restoring it back to what it is, which is great, but you want to get a good backup program to back up your data in place, and we can talk more about that when we come back from the break on how you go about doing that.
Backing up data is very different than backing up all of your programs.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah, and let's talk about those two things, but getting good backup, folk, right off the start is extremely important. Then we won't have to ask you that question when you call us with your questions. We'll talk about one of our listeners in just a moment with their question coming up on the Internet Advisor.
Now back to the Internet Advisor. Once again, your hosts, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Rudell.
Welcome back. It's the Internet. Try that again. It's the Internet Advisor. I'm so excited to be here in our 16th year, celebrating our 16th year of being with you folks. Gary Baker and Cal Carson with me in studio. What we're doing, folks, today is kind of at a leisurely pace, is talking about what you do with a brand new device. And we're also going to throw in some things about when you got a computer that's been around for a while. This is a good time of year to do some maintenance, some key maintenance at the beginning of the year. Before we get to that, though, I was going to ask you guys, we're going to talk about backup in a second. Just before we get there, we've got the virus protection on now. We've tuned that up. We've got our programs, all the operating system and our programs are all updated. What do you think about the notion of just going through, for instance, control panel, or on a Mac device, just going into
the
application folder and taking it. Now with Apple, that isn't so much the issue because they don't have a lot of junkware on it. But so if you don't mind, Cal, focus more on the Windows side.
Sure.
Just going to your control panel, for instance, and getting rid of a lot of the stuff that is, for want of a better word, junkware, or it's the stuff that HP and Samsung...
Let's just call it additional programs that you probably will never use.
Exactly. Or they'll say, it's our service program, whatever else it may be. You know, and they'll name it with the Samsung, the Vio, whatever else it may be. Do you think it's wise to go in there and just unplug that stuff? Because often it's the first level of stuff you see.
Well, you know what I do? I normally don't just dump it arbitrarily because some of those tools, I like HP's got some tools where you can connect and it'll do some diagnostics.
Dell
for you and
does
help
as well.
You and stuff
yep.
like that. So what I'll
do today.
What I normally do when I'm setting up a new computer for someone is I assess the type of uses that they're going to do with it. And I look at all those icons. I go like, you know something? This particular person is going to be more confused with this thing laying on the desktop than not. And so what I'll do is I'll get rid of the icons off the desktop. And if they are programs that do auto starts that will throw stuff up in front of them, I'll turn the auto start off of them, but I won't necessarily remove it from the
Now,
computer.
Let's go to the... go ahead, Greg.
And I would agree completely with Cal. So many people, they have, you know, an intrinsic desire to clean things up and make things orderly, and I'll never use this, and they end up deleting almost everything that they don't need, except for a couple that they do need.
They do need.
and it is just so much better today. Back, you know, 15 years ago, mm-hmm. when we didn't have enough hardware, not enough hard drive space, mm-hmm. you wanted to clean it off so you could put something else on that
right,
you would be
right,
use,
exactly.
that would be useful.
Right.
If you clean it out of the startup menu,
and
right?
let's talk about that in just a second. That's important.
If you clean that up so that it doesn't start. Let it sit there.
So
who
is that
cares?
Still?
It
is
just
that still
doesn't matter
with the startup menu? That now the folks there. The point is that sometimes a lot of programs, or those programs, are put in your startup menu to start right away. When you boot up, it could take a while because all these programs are starting up. So the place to go traditionally has been msconfig, right? With a Windows machine. Am I right? Still the same place to go?
Yeah,
is that what you go
count?
I believe
folder.
That is correct. Yeah, or like he says, to the startup folder itself.
The startup right. folder itself. But the idea is if you go to msconfig, you search for that, it'll bring that reading up. And then there's one reading that says, and I haven't got it in front of me right now because we're both using Windows 8 machines.
Well, yeah. the other thing that you can do too is that you go ahead and start the computer up, and then you go down to the system tray, and my God, look at all those cute little icons down there that I don't ever use.
There you go.
If you right mouse click on them, I believe they'll generally have a settings function on it. And then under the settings, it'll say, start upon boot up or login or whatever it is, you click that off, and then they don't come back anymore.
Right, that's right. And that's really mm-hmm. all you care about, because today, you know, it just doesn't matter if they're sitting out there. It's not like it takes a lot of space. It's not like, you know, it's going to add mm-hmm. a lot of weight to the computer.
Yeah.
Right? It doesn't add much weight. To have that sitting out there. So
no, when you got a 1 terabyte hard drive, and after right. you buy it brand new, and it's got like of the 1 terabyte, it's used up 30 gig. You know, it's like yeah, I think I might have a little.
And you got
space.
6 megabytes of RAM, gigabytes of RAM. You
yeah,
know, to start
yeah.
with.
But and your total amount of data is like, you know, 12 gig. You
I
know?
Would right. I would say though that what I generally do, and I've got it up here now, my Windows 8 machine. You get three options. One is startup selection. One is a normal setup, normal startup, which means that it loads all the device drivers and services. The second one is diagnostic startup, that loads basic devices and services only. And then selective, that's where you go in and decide, I want this, I don't want that. For people who aren't real, you know, big users, I would say go for the middle one, the diagnostic setup. And that means, it doesn't mean the programs won't be there anymore. It just means they won't start up automatically. And when you need them, you can start them up.
And a lot of times today, as more and more people are buying solid-state-only drives, they don't add a lot of that bloatware because there's
right.
not a lot of real estate left.
Right.
And so they're, you know, if they're adding it, and especially if they're going to start something up upon, you know, or it's going to start upon startup, people are trying to you know, the OEMs are trying to boot up quickly.
As
now.
Lean as possible.
Right.
They want to get that very quick time. Yep. Seconds of startup versus like a minute and a half
a
waiting
lot
for everything.
Yeah, a lot of times it's assessing the user. And if that's going true. To be a problem for the user, then you want to make the changes to it. I have some users that I've set up with, and I can leave all that stuff turned on. And it's not going to be a problem for them because
right.
whether it starts up in 10 seconds or in 25 seconds, they're fine. Because
yeah.
all they're going to do is get onto the internet and surf for their email and be happy.
Right,
and, you know,
exactly.
my wife, who does not travel, even well, she has it with her now. She's traveling. But she normally doesn't travel with her PC. It's not like me, who I
yeah.
pack it up every day.
Yeah.
I never turn my computer off. I just close it. Right, hibernates. I open.
Oh, you're
back
one
up
of my
work,
favorite people.
Right, and the only time I do is when I have to have something installed and it has to boot.
Yeah.
You know, to finish the install.
I'm following.
And it's automatically. I know. You know,
you're
a tech support guy.
Because I started taking your advice, Cal. Shutting off once a week.
Just once a week. That's all
yeah,
you have to
so,
do. It helps to clean up things, get things reorganized, that sort of thing. But you know something? If I was Gary Baker, I'd never turn my computer off.
So every once in a while, it does it automatically. Right?
Okay, that's good.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, right.
But otherwise, you don't do that. She doesn't do it hardly at all because she mm-hmm. doesn't travel, and it just hibernates, and she doesn't turn it off. So you're right. With her, it's every couple weeks. I just recycle it.
I do the same thing with my wife's computer.
Yeah,
I'll go into the office where she has it, and I will simply reboot it. Because sometimes you'll see on a Windows 8 machine that it says, I've got important updates to do here. And if you restart it, it will restart and then it'll install those updates. And that's just good to do like once a week, as you said,
and
Cal.
And like there's some things that I do not allow Adobe to automatically install. That I'm still operating. I tell people to get out of the past. And this is one where I'm in the past because Adobe has messed up a few times. It used to be Java. It's the same thing. I don't allow Java updates to happen automatically. I want to be notified. I want to make sure everything's cleaned up, and then I'll go ahead and do the install.
So I'm not impartial to anybody. I don't allow anybody to update. I'm old. I'm a caveman.
You will have to reboot during those times, and that's
option is one of the things when you're setting a machine up is to deal with the automatic updates. Whether you want them to automatically update, I think in most cases. Most people will want to let the operating system do it for them. In most cases.
Or be notified, at least. You definitely do want to update.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I just want to know when I'm going to update, not have it done for me.
Yeah, you want to know when the train wreck's coming, not necessarily after the train wreck has occurred.
I just want to be prepared for it, and I don't want to let it happen.
They didn't update with the surface that they pulled back because it caused such a mess. So it's kind of interesting that you do sometimes want to keep your eye on the net, at least, to see what's happened with some of those.
And when you really think about it, how did they pull it back?
I don't know, to be honest with you. I don't know. That's a good question, yeah.
Don't ask those questions.
Anyway, okay, we got a lean, clean machine now. We're ready to rock and roll on the internet. One more thing, you guys have both talked about it, backup. Cal, you're a backup king. Why don't you talk about it and start there?
Well, you know, if you don't have backup, you're just skating on thin ice constantly. It's part of the total culture of having a computer. You just have to have regular backups on it. And the most important part of the thing is you have to back up your data. Not so much your programs, but your data needs to be backed up on a regular basis and stored in two different spots.
Okay, we're going to talk about some of those different spots coming up in just a moment here on the Internet Advisor. Backup. We're talking backup here on the Internet Advisor. Hi, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Cal Carson in studio with you here. And by the way, thank you to Shannon Maley, who's been our engineer and our producer and a whole lot of other things, wearing many hats. Thank you, Shannon, for being with us as our person behind the glass, making everything come together neatly here for our
program. Where else could she have so much fun for so little money?
And she would agree with you on that.
Yeah, especially the so little money part.
She's nodding vigorously. All right, guys.
So, you know, we were just talking and you had something happen with your computer. The mouse wasn't working. You just kind of reattached the
I'm working on a Microsoft keyboard. Surface 2, the new one, and the mouse disappeared. So I just unsnapped it back on, and boom, it worked again.
And
the Surface uses a mouse? Or are you talking about the touch?
The touchpad. Okay. Right. You can use a wireless mouse with it, too, if you want.
Yeah, want to. But it was so funny because Cal committed a bad dad joke. You know, he was talking about it. Well, it just resurfaced itself.
Oh, dear.
Just a resurface. My kids would say, bad dad joke.
In other words, this one will hang in the air for a while. Okay, hey, something's been hanging in the air for a while with us in our conversation here has been backup. We've now gotten to the place of talking about backup being a very important part because very often people will call us and say, this has happened to my computer, that has happened to the computer. One of the first questions we ask is, have you backed everything up? And there's usually a pregnant silence.
Because there's only two types of people out there, those who need to back up and those who wish they backed up.
That's right.
So which one do you want to be?
All right, so let's talk about what you back up, first of all, okay?
You back up your data. And when I say data, people go like, what are you talking about? Well, on a Windows machine and probably on a Mac as well, there's a folder that's usually called your home folder that's under your user ID. And that has your documents. That'd be like Word, Excel, PowerPoint, you know, word processing, spreadsheets, presentations, stuff like that. You'll have a music folder. That's all your music would be at, your MP3s, your iTunes, all that sort of stuff. You'll have a pictures folder. Oh, my God, what would be in there? Pictures. And then you'd also have, you might, like on a Mac, you'll have a movies folder where you have movies and stuff like that.
Right.
So those things are they're things that you have created or you have downloaded and you wanted to keep. That's what we call data.
And there's settings as well, right? Am I right?
Well,
settings are in there as well. For instance, like your favorites and things like that?
Well, yeah, your favorites could also be in there as well. Yeah, that's true. Right. Or your bookmarks, whatever you want to call them. Those are things that are intrinsic to the user itself.
Right.
And those are the things that you want to keep, because if the computer died and you got a brand new computer, the programs and everything would be back there, but they're not going to provide you those family pictures that you take,
exactly,
or those movies that you've shot,
the things
the
really
music that
you
live, right, and that sort of thing. So those are the things. That's what we call data. So that's what you want to make sure it gets backed up. And you get it backed up in two different places, in my opinion. One, you can back it up locally to an external hard drive,
right,
that you'd have with your computer. And you could keep that somewhere in the house, and that'd be fine, that sort of thing. But in case the house burns up and goes into the high heavens, you also want to have a backup somewhere off-site.
Right.
You could either have that on a second hard drive that you'll take to a neighbor's house, to a family member's, right, house, take it to work, put it in the trunk of your car, somewhere away from that computer.
And then you swap those back and forth?
Yeah, you swap them back and forth on a periodic basis, mm-hmm, and that sort of thing. And that's cool if you're disciplined. If you're not disciplined, you need the secondary backup of having something online. That's using Carbonite or Mozy or my favorite Crash Plan, where it's connected to the internet and it will periodically connect to your computer and take your data and back it up to someplace in the cloud.
Now, that those are paid for services, right?
Yes.
Now, more and more, the operating systems are offering their own places to keep. For instance, with Apple, it's iCloud, right?
Correct.
And they will then automatically, you have, what's it, PhotoStream, I think it is? Am I right? Is that what it's called?
Well, PhotoStream on the iOS devices will automatically back up your photos to the cloud.
And on SkyDrive, it will do the same thing for Windows systems.
That's right.
Or it'll take it up and put up the pictures up there.
Dropbox or Box or half a dozen.
Exactly. There's
like
a number
that
of other ones that are out there. The point is there are now many alternatives for either some or all of your data. For Picasa, for instance, with Google, will take your images
but
up.
You don't. But see, that now that I think of it, exactly the opposite.
Okay.
Right? I don't think of you backing up to the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
I just take and I save to the cloud. And I just save and...
Well, what's the difference there, Gary?
There's a difference between backup to the cloud and save to the cloud. You can do both. When you're saving to the cloud, saving to the cloud is more of an interactive...
conscious
storage device. In other words, you go out to the cloud, you save a file up to it, you can go out there and do collaboration to that file. You're manipulating that file.
I can get to it from any device.
Yes.
I can get to it from my phone, my tablet, my work computer, my home, my personal computer.
Right, and that is different from like a Mozy or
a backup.
And I don't pay for it, anything extra.
Right.
It's all free.
Okay.
And I never worry about backing it up. It's always going to be there because whoever I use, it is their job, it is their livelihood, it is their company that they're going to lose if they don't back it up. And they do a very good job of it because they hire professionals that do one thing and they do that well. And that is, that's two things. It's security and backup. Right?
And, backup, but that's a conscious decision on your part to take that and put it to someplace.
But, yeah, but we are not going to have a choice in a few years.
That may
in
be
the
true.
Computers,
true.
In business, we're all going to virtual desktop interfaces, VDI.
Right.
We're not all there yet. It'll take some companies a little longer than others. Some are there already, right? But in business, that's the way we're going. And in our personal lives, we're using right now Google Mail
How about the online office supplies?
We use Office 365 from Microsoft.
And with that, it's automatically saved to SkyDrive, isn't it?
That's in the cloud. You never back up your mail if you're using Google Mail. You let Google do it.
Right, exactly.
Office 365, you don't back up your mail, you let Microsoft do it.
Well, see, no, I disagree with you on that. And the reason why I disagree is because I have a mail client on my computer, and I download my mail from Google or from Gmail or whatever it is to my computer. So I have a second copy actually on the computer. So that if I inadvertently delete something in the cloud, I still have a second chance of getting it off the computer. That backup is only there in the case that you have a catastrophic failure of wherever the particular piece of data is. Now, I agree with you. Companies that don't take care of the data will definitely be out of business. But you have to also remember, did I save it to the cloud? Did I do this and that? Because you may have created it on your device, but not necessarily saved it.
Well, I only saved to, to the cloud. I don't save to my C drive.
See, I saved to my C drive, and the reason why is because there are times when I can't get the cloud.
So that's never a time when I can't get to the cloud.
Well, I'm not that perfect.
Yeah, but you could be. And it's very easy today. And that is if you have a Wi-Fi, right? You can go anywhere where there's Wi-Fi. If it's in your home or your business or McDonald's or.
But is it always secure Wi-Fi? We do talk about not banking, doing our banking and stuff on public Wi-Fi.
And I want to put a word in also for people.
Do we?
I don't.
Okay, that's okay.
I know a lot of people who feel that way.
Now, on my own. Now, if I'm out in public and I'm using my own Wi-Fi hotspot, yes, I'll do it that way.
So
but not like on public Wi-Fi.
If I can't get to, for whatever reason, my Wi-Fi is down, I just use my hotspot.
And then
I have a hotspot on my tablet.
But hang on, guys.
Verizon,
we're talking about.
I have a hotspot on my tablet, which is Verizon.
We're talking about kind of a niche here of people who are tech savvy and connected.
So.
But I think for the majority of our listeners and for the majority of people who use computers out there, we're less in that kind of position. What you're outlining is true. And I think,
as you said,
more and more is going to be up. I'm talking about people who are.
But the point of the matter, Gary, that I think that Foster's trying to make, and I will say this, and we're sitting here with blinders on. I know we are because I've done it before.
Yeah.
Most people have all those capabilities you talked about.
And we just want to educate them on how to use it.
Okay. But most people don't pay for those capabilities.
That's another part of it, yeah.
I know lots of people who all have smartphones that are Wi-Fi capable, but they're not buying that option because it's more expensive for them.
Yeah, and money is an issue, Gary. I know this from the people in the building that I live in. I live in a senior co-op building, and for a lot of those people with a Social Security income, you reach a lot of these things are interesting to us. I'd love to have a MiFi. I can't afford the device or the expense.
Why use a MiFi? That's so 5 minutes ago. It really is.
Well, I use a MiFi all the time, and I love it.
But you guys travel.
Do you have a smartphone?
Yes.
Why don't you use your hotspot in your smartphone?
I can't. We mean to connect other devices?
Yeah.
It would be an extra cost.
How much?
I don't know exactly.
$10.
Is it $10?
$10
a month. To use it as a MiFi?
Yeah.
To use it as a hotspot?
Yeah, hotspot.
I'll have to check that out with AT&T. I thought
Absolutely.
It was more.
No,
but
AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile, $10 a month.
But the point of the matter is, let's go back to the whole data backup thing. There's two things we're talking about. One is trusting anyone to handle your data, and one is controlling your data. My style says I want to control my data backup. Your style says I trust them, they'll take care of it.
I trust them to back up more than I trust me to back up. And I'm pretty good at backup, but I don't think I'm as good as they are.
Okay, guys. Hey, listen. When we come back, let's do this. We've been talking a lot about new devices. Let's talk about people who have their old PC there. They want to start a brand new year. Talk about some things to do to get that old horse ready for the racetrack. Thank you so much for having joined us here for our Internet Advisor. We're taking kind of a leisurely pace in some ways today, but I think at the beginning of the year, it's always good to talk about some of these things. Just good reminders so that the rest of the year, we aren't faced with disasters because we haven't been backing up. And we've put out some of the alternatives for backing up data and for backup services that are out there. But as Gary was saying,
we're not going to solve this between even Cal and I at this point. Although I did agree with Cal. He came up with a special use case about videographers and people that are photographers that have very large image files. Because you can, some cameras today are 12 megapixels.
How about the 41 megapixels on the Windows phone on the 1020?
So, those are very large files.
Well,
and
you can eat your data. You can eat your data file pretty quickly.
Yeah, but it's becoming so cheap. But you're right. Yeah. It's just time and it is money. If you're for most of us, I have a shared plan with the rest of my family and we do not come close.
No.
Our maximum.
Neither do we, but.
And I'm at one of the small plants.
But one of the things.
And we use it a lot. I have two kids.
I will say this, that we do have more and more video being consumed. And one of the things they're saying is that what will be happening in 2014 is that more of that will be happening.
People will be
consuming on mobile devices.
Oh, my God. Go ahead.
And prices have come down even in transfer rates, right? So prices have come down almost in half in 2 years. So
if you're at home all day, and then about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, try and use your internet, and especially try to go to Netflix. Oh, my God.
It just chews
the bandwidth
We rented The Great Gatsby from iTunes.
Yes.
I still can't watch it because I can't get it to download through Netflix. I'm still getting, and now I had reduced my band, my throughput on Comcast just to get a little money off. I'm thinking of having to go back up to the full throughput because I think that may be part of the problem. But that's what's happening is that there's congestion on lines with Netflix.
Oh, yeah.
That's the largest consumption of data, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And the smartest thing that AT&T could have did and they didn't do with UVerse was to run fiber optics straight up to the house. Mm-hmm. If they would have ran fiber optics straight up to your house, believe me, they'd be leading the market right now because there'd be no problem with bandwidth ever.
Right.
So when UVerse comes in with glass, it only goes to whatever the locus is, and then it comes in on copper to your house.
And then they copper it to your house. But if they ran glass all the way to your house, oh, my God.
Guys, let's jump to talk about people now. Let's say we've got a computer in the house. You've got a desktop that's in the house. You've got a laptop. You've got a device you've been using for a while, let's say, okay? What are some things we should do at the beginning of the year to get that horse ready for the race?
Oh, you're talking about a New Year's resolution? This year, I'm going to really take care of my computer the way I should?
Yeah, well, let's start the year at least doing that. So what are some things that we should think about doing with a device that we've had? Maybe a lot of the things we've been talking about for new computers would be good for this. Make sure you got your updates, right?
Make sure you get yourself on a schedule where you regularly do. Make sure that your updates are always done. Check periodically at least, I'd say, I won't be too hard-nosed. Every other week, check and make sure that your antivirus program really is getting the updates. Right. Check and see if your updates are really coming down from Microsoft or from Apple for your OS updates.
And when you check that, it's what? Just the last definitions? Make sure it was in the last day or two.
That's all you have to do.
Right. By the way, with Mavericks, I'm noticing, it is automatically telling me, hey, I updated this. Yep. For you, automatically in the background. If it's an OS update, then they'll say you need to, because you need to shut down and come back on again. With Windows, very often, Gary, I notice with ours, it's automatically doing the stuff in the background unless it is some major thing that you need to reboot for again.
That's right.
So in most cases, the backups are beginning to take care of that. How about things like physically maintaining your computer?
Well, you know, it depends on where that rascal's been sitting at, and it probably really doesn't matter at all. But most people keep, if they have a desktop computer, they keep that CPU right there on the floor underneath the desk, which is a wonderful place for it. Unfortunately, if you have cats or other animals, you get like tons and tons of fur and air sucked in there.
You get new animals called dust bunnies.
Yeah.
Dust bunnies, right? Dust bunnies are...
So,
like the Australian outback, they tend to multiply.
What you can do is, if you're not terribly skilled and you feel uncomfortable opening up that box underneath the desk, just take your vacuum cleaner, put that little brush attachment on the back of it, turn the computer off, and suck all that dust and stuff off any vent hole that you see on the computer, both on the back and the front and the sides.
Now, if you're daring, what we would suggest you do, again, unplug the machine before you do anything else, okay?
Specifically that 120-volt cable that goes into the wall.
Then Ed used to say this, then press the start button so you discharge anything in the capacitors inside, right?
Yep.
So no static electricity.
Then you open up the case. Now, this is, again, for the folks who want to do this, really not that hard, and then take that vacuum cleaner again. But be careful now because there's some delicate stuff inside there. You want to vacuum out the inside, and especially over the CPU, where you can have the blades on the
heat diffuser. That would be the heat sink on the top of the CPU.
Dust can build up in there, and that can lead to slowing down your computer.
The other way that you can do it, where if you don't want to touch it with those plastic parts from the vacuum cleaner and set up any static electricity, is take that box out to your garage. Take your vacuum cleaner with you. Put the tube on it so it blows
instead of
sucks. Stand back a ways so that you don't, ingest all the dust. And just gently put it over top the CPU and blow the dust off of it.
And don't bother spending $7 for a can of compressed air.
Well, it'll get into you can get into tighter spaces with it, but you can do it that way with that.
Can you do damage with that? Because that's cold, I know, coming out the other end of that compressed air can. Because I know it's cold in your hand if you're spraying with it.
Well, you can't do damage with it. The best way to do it is you turn the computer off, let the computer cool down first, and then spray it with that. That way you don't take
How about the fan blades? Ed used to say you can drive a bearing?
You could spin them too fast and burn the bearings out in them. But
try not to do that for minutes or so.
Do it for a quick burst or two won't hurt it. But if you sit there and empty an entire can on it.
So if you have a desktop, it's usually it's usually the big fan at the back. And be careful because, as you said, you could burn the bearings out on that. And that's to your power supply. That'll get the dust out there. And then the inside, it would be to get it off of the CPU. Make sure that's dusted
out. Now, with the laptops, you're not going to be tearing the laptops apart. Right. But what I suggest you do with it, if you look along the edges on the laptop, specifically on the sides and in the back, you'll see little holes that are there for ventilation. Take a toothbrush and just gently go through there and brush out any dust that's in those ports and get them out of there. Maybe take some of that compressed air in that particular time and blow them out as well.
Okay, carefully blow it out as well. Okay, very good. Any other things you can think of, Gary, for the beginning of the year where the computer put things back together again, obviously, and then we've tuned up all the programs on the inside. Anything else we need to think of? Maybe the backup. If you haven't done backup, this would be the time to make that New Year's resolution work.
If you ever have to ask yourself, when was the last time I did a backup, that means you need to do a backup,
right?
Period.
I'm one of those lazy. I love the fact that I've got this little 500 gig hard drive that I have sitting underneath my computer that backs up everything that's going on with Time Machine. I'm on a Mac. And then I also have the Carbonite that I got as well, because that's just kind of belts and suspenders. But again, Gary, I find myself more and more trusting iCloud to take care of my iPhone pictures and SkyDrive to take care of stuff that I do on the Microsoft side. So
have some sort of backup going, even if... Even at the very worst, if you had a backup you only did once a year, that would be once a year better than no backup at all.
Exactly.
And here's the other trick. Every now and then, even if you're doing backups on a regular basis, once in a while, take one of the backups and attempt to restore one of the files.
That's
because
a very good
point. A backup you can't restore is not
a backup. It's not a backup, yeah. And I guess I have not tried that yet. I almost don't want to find out. But I had done it with Time Machine. I have gone back and restored files there, which is nice because you get the different versions. And I think at Microsoft now, with the Windows 8, you can go back to versions of different things. So, folks, lots of advice there. We're going to have links on the homepage at internetadvisor.net. If you want to get hold of us with your questions about your specific problems, email us through that Contact Us form. Coming up in the month of January and February, we're going to be on live, and we've got some great programs coming up on our home station, WJR, 760 AM in Detroit. But for the rest of you who are on the network, you'll be hearing us every week, ongoing. And if you have questions for us, we want to hear from you as well. So please use that Contact Us button. That's at internetadvisor.net. Shannon Bailey, thank you again so much for engineering things. Gary and Cal, thank you. Ed will be back with us next week, and Shane throughout the year. We got lots of good stuff coming up. We want you to be here for it. Make sure you check out our Facebook page as well. You'll find even more information there. News items that come up, we post there as well as on our homepage. In the meantime, have a great 2014. We look forward to you all year long. You've been listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisors Show, the longest-running, locally produced computer show in Detroit radio. If you'd like to find out more about our weekly show, ask a question of our experts, or find the show notes for this podcast, visit internetadvisor.net. And you'll also find us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.